Fruitarian Diet and Physical Rejuvenation by O.L.M. Abramowski, read by Eli Martyr. The Order of the Golden Age, a philanthropic society, founded in 1895. The Order of the Golden Age advocates the adoption of a natural and hygienic dietary as a preventative of disease, a practical remedy for physical deterioration, and an efficacious way of lessening human suffering and subhuman pain. The fruitarian system of living makes a hygienic and humane life possible, and tends to promote health, strength, and longevity. Guidebooks to fruitarian diet and cookery, and other literature containing information upon every aspect of this important question, are published and can be obtained at the international offices. The honorary secretaries will gladly give advice to inquirers concerning this reform. The Fruitarian Diet and Physical Rejuvenation. I advocate the simple and single natural food of original man, even for modern man, in spite of all the long centuries of mixed and cooked dietary of mankind. I feel strongly, very strongly on this subject. And why? Firstly, because the natural uncooked food has saved my life, has rejuvenated my body, and made out of an overfed old man courting apoplexy and rushing blindly into a premature grave, a comparatively young, vigorous, and healthy person, fit and willing to live another half century. And secondly, because it has, through my mediumship, saved many a valuable life threatened by disease, which would have succumbed under the natural and modern diet and orthodox treatment. Up to my 50th year, I lived on the common mixed diet. I had meat, bread, vegetables, a little fruit, etc., all cooked. I drank tea and coffee, beer and whiskey, and smoked cigars. I grew stout and heavy. And, although I did my work as a physician and surgeon with the usual amount of success, I began to feel that I would not be able to stand the strain of an active life much longer, as the resistive powers of my tissues were getting weaker, and more infirmities presented themselves from year to year. Palpitations of the heart, sleeplessness, headaches, rheumatic and digestive troubles, and other disorders made their appearance, and became more and more confirmed. I still managed to square all these warnings until the unduly high blood pressure, caused through constant stimulation, brought on epistaxis, and my nose bled once for 8 hours, and in the following year for 14 hours. An examination of my arteries proved them to be in a progressed state of hardness and brittleness, arterial sclerosis, as it is called. We are as old as our arteries. As soon as I found out the dangerous condition of my vascular system, I knew that my days were numbered, and that my Mother Earth would soon cover this ruined body of mine unless a miracle happened. The miracle has happened. My arteries have carried me safely, so far, through 10 more active and strenuous years, and they are in much better condition today than they were 20 years ago. All the symptoms enumerated above have disappeared. The power and endurance of my body and mind have increased to a wonderful extent, and I feel more vigorous, more active, and more certain of my life than I did when a young man. More still, I know now that I have my life and my health in my keeping, and that if I live right, I shall prolong my life to its natural limit. The uncertainty of life and health is usually considered a proved fact. And we might fall in with this public error when we see young and old, weak and strong, healthy and sickly people die with apparently no regard to their station or condition. Still, in the face of that experience, I declare that accidents excepted, there is nothing more certain, more reliable than a life properly lived. We do not die. We kill ourselves, and mostly with our teeth. There is nothing better proved than the equal health and the equal longevity of free, wild animals, the birds and insects in the air, the fishes in the water, the animals in the forests, and on the prairies. They all have their certain term of life, and they all live up to it if accidents and injuries are excluded. Furthermore, they are healthy and perfect specimens of their kind. Where are the perfect specimens of mankind? And how many of modern men manage to live even approximately to our natural term, vis-a-vis from 100 to 120 years? What about the state of health of man and his subhuman helpers, the domestic animals? Is their flesh really weak and heir to innumerable diseases, while that of the wild animals is strong and immune? No, the difference is not in the original flesh, but in the method of repairing and replacing their flesh. It is in the food material, for we are what we eat. No free-living animal ever tampers with its food. One single food is enough for it from year to year and through all the ranging seasons. If it cannot get this food on the spot, it will either go where it can get it, led to it by an unerring instinct, like the migratory birds, or it will die, like the silkworm, which will not eat anything else if it cannot get the leaf of the white mulberry. Free-living animals will not improve their food, nor will they eat any unnatural or artificial mixture. They keep their flesh pure and healthy. They do not know disease. They know only life, full, buoyant life in constant health and death. Man, especially civilized man, is not satisfied with the single food offered to him by the hands of nature. In fact, in many instances, he has quite forgotten what his natural food is, and looks with fear and suspicion upon the luscious fruits, the strength-giving nuts, and the ideal bodybuilders, the grains in their natural state. He has for centuries prepared and improved his food. He has cooked and stewed, baked and roasted, changed and mixed the most heterogeneous substances in such a multiplicity of ways that this whole food has become an unintelligible and, for his body, mostly useless and poisonous mess of devitalized and disorganized food materials, which he is pleased to call mixed diet. This dead and artificial food is not only unable to keep the body alive and in repair, but is filling it with waste matter, and forms the preeminent cause of disease and premature death. In spite of all the boasted modern chemical remedies, changing with kaleidoscopic rapidity from day to day, in spite of vaccination and injections, in spite of serotherapy and organotherapy, in spite of all the modern artificial, electrical, and magnetic appliances, the general death rate of thyroid and of the epidemic diseases is as high today as it was centuries ago. The deaths from Bright's disease, diabetes, pneumonia, and cancer are increasing in number every year, and only in the mortality from pulmonary tuberculosis, when treated by natural means in its first stage, appears a slight reduction. Sanitation and hygiene have reduced the number and the extent of epidemics. But if you are once attacked by any disease, your chances of recovery under the usual modern medical treatment are today hardly better than they were during the darkest ages of medical quackery, of human superstition and credulity. These and similar observations had so much disheartened me that after a not successful medical career of 15 years, I had decided to give up the medical profession as soon as the income from my land here would supply my wants. During the last 6 years, however, a change has taken place in my relation to my profession. I'm no longer willing to give it up. On the contrary, I am today filled with an enthusiasm for the noble art of healing, even greater than I felt when, as a young doctor, I was just let loose upon unsuspecting humanity a generation ago. But my present enthusiasm is not founded on the blind belief in authority and the daily repeated experimenting with newly invented remedies. It has its roots in my own experience and studies and has changed views with regard to the nature of disease. Yes, my own body, my whole family, and the families of my friends and patients have proved it, and are proving it daily, that our health depends upon our food, and that we have it in our own power to keep healthy or to get sick. Before I started on the natural food, I suffered from numerous colds every year, and for years I had a severe attack of influenza every Christmas. Wife and children were equally troubled, colds, sore throats, diphtheria, measles, whooping cough, even typhoid. They all appeared in our family in their turn, and at pretty regular intervals. Since fruit has been our mainstay, and meat has disappeared from our table, since water and fruit juices became our drinks, since tea and coffee were reduced to a minimum, no disease whatever has made its appearance in our home, and we have lost all fear of disease or infection, while in quite an automatic way I have lost all inclination and taste for beer, whiskey, and tobacco. The two children, born since our conversion, a girl now 5 years old and a boy 3 years old, have never had a day's sickness in bed and have developed in a way far superior to my older children, and promise to grow into as perfect specimens of humanity as the imperfect condition of their ancestors will permit. And the results of my patients? Well, they are simply phenomenal. Out of 166 cases of typhoid at the Mildura District Hospital, treated with fruit and fruit juices, without any drugs or unnatural alimentation, only 2 died. The one coming too late in the 3rd week under the regime, the other succumbing to a heat wave when 4 apparently healthy people died in the streets around in 1 week with heat apoplexy. Of 9 cases of appendicitis without operation or drugs, not one died. Inflammation of the lungs passed into convalescence in from 4 to 10 days without even a crisis. Acute affections of the bronchial tubes, the bowels, the nerves, rheumatic and other feverish attacks have been deprived of their pains and anxiety and cured in the shortest time through fruit juices and fruit fasts. Besides this saving of life, the greatest recommendation for the new treatment is undoubtedly the almost complete absence of complications in any of the diseases, and the all but certain relief from distressing symptoms in a comparatively short time. The typhoid patients, for instance, were hardly ever delirious. Neither did they show any threatening symptoms from the bowels, excepting a few slight and short hemorrhages, no vomiting, distension, or diarrhea, no complication from the lungs, or the heart, or any other organ. The 9 cases of pneumonia all ran a very unexciting course. The crisis was a mere falling off of the temperature, with very little sweating, often none at all, no symptom of collapse or delirium. The surprisingly favorable influence of our treatment upon the course of disease could not fail to impress itself upon our nursing staff. All the experienced nurses, occupying the place of matron, were, in consequence of their previous training in other hospitals, at first conscientiously prejudiced against the treatment, but without exception, they all were very soon convinced of its exceedingly favorable results, and then became its most persistent advocates. The younger nurses, whom I was training myself, never doubted my teaching. The ultimate result with our nurses since 1993 was that most of them became fruitarians themselves and, as a matter of fact, got stronger and healthier than they ever were before. In surgical cases, the fruit fast has provided a wonderful factor in purifying the blood and strengthening the healing powers of nature, so that without any antiseptic wound poisons, using only cleanliness and sterilized water during operations, our wounds and injuries now heal better and quicker under a common wet compress than they ever did before under carbolic acid, sublimate, or iodoform. If, after a time of feeding, the wounds do not look as well as they should, a short fast with a restricted quantity of fresh fruit very soon, puts fresh life into the healing process and renders the wounds clean and healthy-looking. The small number of these cases at the hospital does not warrant any further remarks. I have, however, before me a letter dated June 3rd, 1908, kindly sent me by Dr. Hosiah Oldfield, the well-known London surgeon and superintendent of the fruitarian Lady Margaret Hospital at Bromley, England, which proves the immense benefit of a regime similar to our own surgical cases, and which I shall here quote in full. Dr. Oldfield says,
I am very much interested in your letter of the Roth of February, and especially to know that you are carrying out similar experiments in Australia to those which I am doing here, and that you find the fruitarian dietary is so valuable in your hospital. I have had a very little experience in typhoid cases myself, but we have a great deal of surgical work here, and my experience is that one gets a smaller amount of shock and less amount of inflammation, and more rapid healing and more complete restoration to the original vitality than one gets on a meat diet. I should have no objection to your quoting this statement of mine before your medical congress, as I make it with the experience of having done over 2,000 operations on patients treated on the fruitarian diet, and I have come to the conclusion that to obtain the best results, it is well to put the patient on a fruitarian dietary a month before operation. In abdominal cases and rectal cases, and in internal cases, the benefit of having a clean, aseptic condition of the bowels is of the greatest importance. I have lost only one case after operation during the last 10 years. Unquote. At Coronet Hill, my sanitarium near Melbourne, cases of neurasthenia, paralysis, Bright's disease, drug and alcohol poisoning, rheumatism, arthritis, diabetes, skin diseases, arteriosclerosis, and many other afflictions, which gradually became worse under the usual treatment, and were eventually declared incurable by the orthodox profession, have been not only improved, but healed, absolutely cured, when enough time was allowed for nature's slow, but safe, healing process. General principles. This treatment is based on the following observations. Disease is practically restricted to man and his domestic animals. Free animals are nearly always healthy, like the birds in the air and the fish in the water. The difference in living between man and free animals will give us the cause of disease. Free animals live on natural food and natural drink. Man seldom likes natural food and drink. He prepares his food and drink. Preparation of food means, practically, the application of heat to it, or, in other words, cooking in all its different branches. Natural food does not want cooking, but is chemically changed, often killed, by boiling temperature, whilst a great number of unnatural foodstuffs are made eatable and digestible by heat. Cooked food is dead food. A diet full of dead material forces the body to great exertion in order to extract the few living particles or to revivify those that can essentially yet be used, and thereby weakens the constitution, while, on the other hand, it must fill the body with useless material, often decomposed and poisonous, which we call waste matter. Waste matter, the product of cooked food, is the cause of most bodily encumbrances and impeded bodily functions. Nature may for a time accommodate this waste matter, but then it has to work under difficulties, which are the symptoms of so-called chronic disease. As soon as the bodily functions cannot go on any longer under the daily increasing burden of waste matter, the process of life would come to a standstill, and death would follow if nature did not start a process of removing the waste matter. Now, this process of burning off rubbish in order to enable the body to go on with the work of life is called disease. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to be it for today. Thank you so much for sitting through this reading of Fruitarian Diet and Physical Rejuvenation. If you like this reading and you like my videos on this channel, then make sure to subscribe to the Free Melon Society on YouTube. You can check me out on Instagram as well at freemelon_Eli. And we'll see you when we continue this reading on the next video. Okay, love you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.